So we're going to read tonight, and we're going to travel a long way. We're going to travel quite a ways tonight. We're going to travel from here, all the way up to here, and you see this, 38 years, so we're going to take a long journey. And we spent a little time last night here, and oh, there's so much, you just like to stop and spend the rest of the time here. Then I know everybody wouldn't be satisfied with that. So we're going to read tonight. First of all, I want to read in the 8th chapter of Deuteronomy, just for a verse there. Deuteronomy chapter 8. And reading from verse 2. And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldst keep his commandments or no. Verse 16. Who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee and that he might prove thee to do thee good at thy latter end. Now there's the secret why God led them through the wilderness for 40 years. That's the secret. That he might humble them. And that he might prove to them what's in their own heart. Now God knew what was in their heart, but they didn't. God knows what's in our heart, but we don't know what's in our heart until we come into certain circumstances. And so, don't find any fault with Israel now when we're reading about them, because just what is true of Israel, in a physical sense, is certainly true of us. We have the same kind of a heart. We have lessons to learn. And we're going to turn to the book of Numbers tonight. The book of Numbers, and chapter 9. We're going to pick up some verses for these different experiences. Chapter 9. And reading from verse 15. And on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, namely the tent of the testimony. And at even there was upon the tabernacle, as it were, the appearance of fire until the morning. So it was always. The cloud covered it by day, and the appearance of fire by night. And when the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, then, after that, the children of Israel journeyed. And in the place where the cloud abode, there the children of Israel pitched their tents. At the commandment of the Lord, the children of Israel journeyed, and at the commandment of the Lord they pitched. As long as the cloud abode upon the tabernacle, they rested in their tents. And when the cloud tarried long upon the tabernacle, many days, then the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and journeyed not. And so it was, when the cloud was a few days upon the tabernacle, according to the commandment of the Lord, they abode in their tents, and according to the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. And so it was, when the cloud abode from even until the morning, and that the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they journeyed. Whether it was by day or by night that the cloud was taken up, they journeyed. Or whether it were there 2 days, or a month, or a year, that the cloud tarried upon the tabernacle, remaining thereon, the children of Israel abode in their tents, and journeyed not. But when it was taken up, they journeyed. At the commandment of the Lord, they rested in their tents, and at the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. They kept the charge of the Lord at the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. Now, you read that, you know just exactly how you get along, and how I get along. We get so bored, and so fed up. Why, we just pitched that tabernacle last night, and now the cloud's moving. We've got to go in the morning. That's what it says. You see, they were dependent people, and they were going as God led. They didn't have a whole schedule lined up a year ahead, and they could just tell where they were going to be. It just shows that God was showing them that they're in His hand, and He was the guide, and He was the leader. And so when you read that chapter, you think, my. And then they'd stay 2 years in the one place. And then they'd move. Just get settled down, and then they'd move. So, God was teaching what was in their own heart. We never know what's in our heart until we get into circumstances. And that's what God was teaching them. Now let us read in chapter 10. Chapter 10, verse 11. And it came to pass on the 20th day of the second month, in the second year, that Zab was taken up from off the tabernacle of the testimony. And the children of Israel took their journey out of the wilderness of Sinai, and the cloud rested in the wilderness of Paran. And they first took their journey according to the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. Now we'll read in chapter 11. Verse 1. And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, and the Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled. And the fire of the Lord burnt among them, and consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. And the people cried unto Moses. And when Moses prayed unto the Lord, the fire was quenched. And he called the name of the place Tabitha, because the fire of the Lord burnt among them. And the mixed multitude that was among them fell to lusting. And the children of Israel also wept again and said, Who shall give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish which we did have in Egypt freely, and the cucumbers, and the melons, and the leeks, and the garlic, onions, and the garlic. But now our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all beside this manna before our eyes. And the manna was as coriander seed, and the color thereof as the color of bedlam. And the people went about and gathered it, and ground it in mills, and beat it in mortar, and baked it in pans, and made cakes of it, and the taste of it was as the taste of fresh oil. And when the dew fell upon the camp in the night, the manna fell upon them. Let us look down. Here's dear Moses. He's exasperated. Verse 11. And Moses said unto the Lord, Wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant? And wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight, that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? Have I conceived all this people? Have I begotten them that they shouldest say unto me, Carry them in thy bosom? As a nursing father beareth the sucking child unto the land which thou swearest unto their fathers? Whence should I have flesh to give all this people? For they weep unto me, saying, Give us flesh that we may eat. I'm not able to bear all this people alone, because it is too heavy for me. And if thou deal thus with me, kill me, I pray thee, out of hand. If I have found favor in thy sight, and let me not see my wretchedness. And the Lord said unto Moses, Gather unto me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom thou knowest to be the elders of the people, and officers over them, and bring them unto the tabernacle of the congregation, that they may stand there with thee. And I will come down and talk with thee there, and I will take of the Spirit which is upon thee, and will put it upon them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with thee, that thou bear it not thyself alone. Now, just a little comment here. They had no more power, but they had a lot more machinery. They had 70 men, but they had no more power, because God had given Moses the power. But you can see, Moses, although he was the meekest man that ever lived, he was fed up with the children of Israel. Sad, wasn't it? Now, let us go to chapter 12. There's a little secret in this. Chapter 12, verse 1. And Miriam and Aaron spake against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman he had married. Or he had married an Ethiopian woman. And they said, Hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us? And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very meek above all men which were upon the face of the earth. And the Lord spake suddenly unto Moses and unto Aaron and unto Miriam, Come out ye three unto the tabernacle of the congregation. And they three went out. And the Lord came down in the pillar of the cloud, and stood at the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam. And they both came forth. And he said, Hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision, and will speak unto him in a dream. My servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all mine house. With him I will speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches. And the similitude of the Lord shall be, he behold. Wherefore then were ye not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. And the cloud departed from off the tabernacle, and behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow. And Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. And Aaron said unto Moses, Alas, my Lord, I beseech thee, lay not this sin upon us, wherein we have done foolishly, and wherein we have sinned. Let her not be as one dead, of whom the flesh is half consumed when he cometh out of the womb. And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, Heal her now, O God, I beseech thee. And the Lord said unto Moses, If her father had but spit in her face, should she not be ashamed 7 days? Let her be shut out from the camp 7 days, and after that, let her be received again. And Miriam was shut out from the camp 7 days, and the people journeyed not till Miriam was brought in again. And afterwards the people removed to Hezron, and pitched in the wilderness of Paran. Now just a little comment here, we may touch it again. But here was the whole work of God in the camp held up for 7 days because of one woman spoke against the servant of God. 7 days. Now, let us go down to chapter 13. And the Lord, verse 1, And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Send thou men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I have given unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, every one a ruler among them. Now let us go down and see what happens when they come back. Verse 21. So they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, as men come to Hamath. And they ascended by the south and came unto Hebron, where Ahiman and Shishai and, I don't know this fellow's name. And Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And they came unto the brook of Eshcol and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes. And they bare it between the two upon a staff. And they brought of the pomegranates and the figs. And the place was called the brook of Eshcol, because of the cluster of grapes which the children of Israel cut down from them. And they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and Aaron, and all the congregation of the children of Israel, unto the wilderness of Paran and Kadesh, and brought back word unto them, and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him, and said, We came unto the land, whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea, and by the coast of Jordan. Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to take it. But the men that went up with him said, We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. Verse 33, And there we saw the giants, the son of Anak, which came of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers. And so were we in their sight. How do they know? They saw the grasshoppers and the giants, but they didn't see God. Caleb saw God. Now let us look down in, we'll soon be finished reading, in chapter 14. Chapter 14. And God tells them here, we'll break in at verse 25. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites dwelt in the valley. Tomorrow turn you and get you into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. And the Lord spake unto Moses and to Aaron, saying, How long shall I dare with this evil congregation which murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against me. Now look down, verse 32. But as for you, your carcasses shall fall in the wilderness, and your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years, and bear your whoredom, but till your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. After the number of the days in which ye searched the land, even 40 days, each day for a year, shall ye bear your iniquities, even 40 years, and ye shall know my breach of promise. I, the Lord, have said, I will surely do it unto all this evil congregation that are gathered together against me in this wilderness. They shall be consumed, and there they shall die. Verse 38. But Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of the men that went to search the land. And Moses told this saying unto the people, all the children of Israel. And the people mourned greatly. And then they rose up early in the morning, and they got them up into the top of the mountain, saying, Lo, we are here. We'll go in unto the place which the Lord has promised. For we have sinned. And Moses said, Wherefore now? Do ye transgress the commandment of the Lord? But it shall not prosper. Go not up, for the Lord is not among you, that ye be not smitten before your enemies, and so on. Now, that's all we'll read, just for the present, and trust we'll be able to bring some things out of it. Another comment on this. They wouldn't go in. God told them the land was good. And God says, you go in and possess it. They brought back the fruits of it. They wouldn't go in by faith. But when God says you can't go in, we say, all right, we will go in. We'll go in now. And so the stubbornness of the human heart wouldn't obey God and go in by faith. But when God says you can't go in, he said, we will go in. But God said, no, you can't go in now. He says, I breach a promise. And he says, for 40 days you search the land. Now he says, for 40 years you're going to wander. That's the whole secret here. Now there's a spiritual application here, and we hope to be able to bring out some little things in relation to it. I know these thoughts are scattered, and maybe some of you don't follow at all, but you know, last night we were on this tabernacle here. Now we mentioned back here that God was for them to bring them out of Egypt. Without any movement on their part, God came down and he was going to move them out of Egypt. He came down to deliver them. So he was for them. Then when they got out of Egypt and they came here on this pilgrim journey, they didn't know the way. So God went with them to show them the way. But then when they come here, as we noticed last night, now God is amongst them. Giving them all together, he came down to dwell with them. And to be their God. Now everything changed when here they put themselves under law. And God made a covenant with them. You see, up until this time there was no sacrifices. Like there was no sin offering. There was no peace offering. There was no meal offering. There was no trespass offering. These all came in after God made a covenant with them. And it was ratified in blood. And then God brings in all these offerings. That would be a profitable study in itself. But that before this, there was priests in their own home. There was no priesthood until Aaron was ordained priest. There was no priest in Israel. Man was a priest in his own house. Job could offer sacrifices, and so on. And the offering that was offered was an approach offering. Now we believe it was going to be a burnt offering. But where there is no law, there is no transgression of the law. And so the sin offering came in when God gave them the Ten Commandments, and so we could go on about the offering. Now God is amongst them. And it changes the whole complexion of their journey. And that's what we said last night. We were finishing the book of Leviticus. It seems so dry. Why did God say you can't take a bird's nest? Why did God say you have to do this to be clean? Why did God tell them all these All these dietary laws, you couldn't eat this and you can't eat that. Of course, there's some people still living in Judaism. You see, you couldn't eat lobsters if you were living in Israel today, because there's no fins or scales. You couldn't eat clams and all. And some people have even tried to bring that over into this dispensation. It had nothing to do with this dispensation at all. Well, anyway, if you think the clams aren't good, they have no fins or scales. However, not to get bogged down, that's why God made these dietary laws, because he's amongst them. And that's why, as you read through, all things had to be clean and kept, because they were the people of God, and God was amongst them. And I tell you, it was a serious business. Now, they took their journey. They started out. And we read, the mixed multitude that was amongst them fell to lusting. That always happened. It happened in that day, and it happens in this day. This is one of the plagues of Christianity today, in this dispensation in which we live, where God does a work and saves a sinner, really born again. The devil will like to plant a tare alongside of the wheat. Of course, people say, well, you know, we don't believe in separating people. We believe in having communion and everybody sit around. Let a man judge himself. Because doesn't it say, let the tares and the wheat grow together? Sure does. That's what the Lord Jesus said. But he didn't say let them grow together in the church. He said let them grow together in the field, not in the church. God never meant an unconverted sinner to be in church fellowship. Why? Because they're dead in trespasses and in sin. They could be in a building called a church building, but they couldn't be in fellowship in what we said last night, a New Testament church, built together for a habitation of God through the Spirit, held together by those bars. No, it's only for born-again people. But one of the plagues of this generation is the mixed multitude. Oh, yes, I'm saved. Sure. How did you get saved? Well, you know, it is quite a while ago. It came kind of gradually to me. You know, I really couldn't pinpoint it. So long ago. You get all kinds of stories. And you say, well, how did you get saved? And then they begin to tell you. And you know, it's just like we used to have an old pump. And when you went out to get the water, you had to pour in a whole half bucket of water. And then you had to prime it. And you begin to prime, and you say, well, yes, and you give them a little strip there, and you just get out of it what you pour into them. And then they stop. Oh, and then you start saying, no, pour in another little bit. What is it? I tell you, friend, the person who's born again and going to heaven, oh, they may have doubts at times, but there's a genuine wind there. And the mixed multitude fell to lusting. And listen what happened. You see, the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God. They are foolishness unto him. Neither can he know them because they are spiritually discerned. And you mean to tell me that those ethnic multitude can appreciate the manna? No. They wanted flesh. Give us flesh. Give us flesh. They fell to lust. And of course, they got the others discontented. And that's what happened. Now, I'll give you a little warning, you who are younger. You watch your company. Watch who you associate with. Watch your company. Because the devil loves to get a bright Christian. He loves to put a false professor alongside him. He makes money. And by, they begin to crave for flesh. That is, they want the old things. There's no enjoyment in the things of God for them. Read the Bible, that's dry, and the prayer meeting, that's dry, and all these things. They want the old flesh pots. So the mixed multitude fell to lusting. What are they going to do? They all got discontented there in the Numbers, and many of them died and were buried. And you remember poor Moses. He just was exasperated. And you wouldn't wonder at it. Well, you can hardly put up with another Christian if they don't
you stand for swear, you want them to hold you up. And you know, they don't, if they don't, do the right thing, you almost get fed up. You say, I can't do a thing with them. What was it, the whole congregation? And he came to God, he said, I can't handle this multitude. He said, and you see what they did? They blamed Moses. He said, you brought us up here, Moses, out of a land flowing with milk and honey. Imagine this land flowing with milk and honey. You brought us up here into this wilderness to kill us with hunger. Moses, we're going to stone you. He didn't see God at all. And then Moses went to God. And Moses says, you might as well kill me. God, I can't handle it. Can't handle it. Do you ever feel like that? You can't handle circumstances? Huh? You see, God wasn't only teaching the children of Israel, he was also teaching his servant Moses. I tell you, sometimes in the service of the Lord, you just feel like Moses. Moses, I can't handle it. Well, God said, Moses, call the congregation. And he says, take 70 of the elders. Now, this is the test. Take 70 of the elders of Israel, pick them out, and then I'll take the spirit that is on you, and I'll put it onto these 70 elders. I'll divide it up. It's all on you now, but I'll divide it up on them. As I said, now they're going to have more machinery, but they're not going to have any more power. But at least, dear Moses, is going to have an easier time. He's going to have 70. There's going to be 71 of them now to consult one with another. And I do believe sometimes it's easier if you have good, sound counsel from others that you have confidence in. But then, the difficulty arises, who are you going to pick? That's a trouble. Now remember, there were thousands there. We get the numbers of men and women of Israel. And to pick 70 elders, someone's going to be hurt. Aren't they? Now, we always get this in a little assembly. You know, when we plant an assembly, and we've seen some of that done over the years, and it's fine when the evangelist is there, and he has all the responsibility. But he's not going to stay there. It's not scriptural for him to stay there. And so he's going to look out, and as it were, men are going to rise up and they're going to take a little responsibility. And as they did in Paul's day, in the new assembly, very often you do the same thing. And they pointed out the ones that they felt were eligible to take a little responsibility. We had that trouble in a little meeting that we saw started when Robert McElwain and I, and we wondered who'd be the correspondent. We talked it over. Well, we said, so-and-so can't handle the books. Although he had a nice personality, very, very outgoing personality. But he can't handle the books because his business is in disarray. He's in debt. He can't handle his finances. And so to give him the assembly money would be the wrong thing to do altogether. But he was it. But then we said he could be the correspondent. But we didn't know whether he could write or not. So a correspondent won't be much good if he couldn't write, would he? And brother, if you get to the place your hand is so jerky you can't write, don't get your wife to do it. Give it to some other brother in the assembly. And so we thought of this other brother. Well, he could handle the money in the assembly and the assembly business because he doesn't know a man a penny. And he has good business ethics and all. And so there it was. We didn't know what this other man could write. So lo and behold, when we were trying to figure this all out, we got a note. One of the children came across the road with a note. And it was from Daddy, wanting to know if Robert would go down and cut the boy's hair. Good writing. He said, there we have it. He can handle the books. Well, anyway, this is just personal experience. We pointed them out. Now, we didn't know the man that we gave the assembly books to. He was out of debt, all right, but we didn't know he was tight-fisted. A tight-fisted man that squeezes a penny is not the man to have the assembly fund. And we said to him one time, calling him by name, well, he says, I always like to have a little nest egg. Well, we said, the nest egg is all right if it's your own, but don't forget this money that is given by God's people belongs to the Lord. And you're not supposed to have it as a nest egg. It's given to put it. And that was just a little, well, anyway, the both of them, either one of them, are in that assembly today, but the assembly's going on. Now, why did I get into that line? Well, for this reason. They set it up, 70. Now, I'm going to do a little supposing here. Write the next chapter. Miriam and Aaron get their heads together. Didn't you see it working? I thought my son would have been one of them. Well, there's John, you know, and he's just as able as that young, as that family Billy is. Why didn't they choose him? Why didn't Moses do that? And you just see them getting their heads together and saying, this is not fair. Our boy's left out. Or our cousin was left out. Or something like that. I'm just supposing this. You say you're not supposed to suppose. Well, anyway, when you're dealing with people, you can just see. So what happened? Miriam and Aaron, they raked up something in Moses' life. Envious, you see. Envy. Rake up something in the background, and they came to Moses. You see, in Moses, you know that Ethiopian woman you married? And they gave him a real hassle over it. That was all settled with God long before. God called Miriam, Moses, and Aaron into his presence. He said to Miriam, are you not afraid? I tell you, brother and sister, the fear of God should be on us. If a servant of God or any Christian is walking in fellowship with God, you watch your motives. And whatever you do, don't you let that green eye of envy, because things didn't go your way. Wake up something against that person. And you know, they say, but, and then it goes. Lay aside all malice and all guile and hypocrisies and envies and all evil speaking. And as newborn babes desire the sincere milk of the word that you may grow thereby. And so envy. We have to live in the world. We have to make a living in the world and all that. But being let go, they went to their own company. Now here they were in Egypt. Here they're in the wilderness. Here they're in the Canaan land. And the Christian were in all three at once. But here's the type. They come here and God told them that there's a land flowing with milk and honey. The promised land. Now she should go in and possess it. This is the truth of Romans 6. Romans chapter 6. If ye be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things of the earth. For ye have died, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, shall appear, then shall ye also appear with him in glory. Set your affection. Now, dear Christian, where's your affection? Where's your affection? Is it on heavenly things? This is a good way to test whether you're dwelling in the Canaan, whether you've entered into that rest, Canaan rest. Where are your affections? We were preaching somewhere one time, and I got a little thought. We had a sister over in PEI. She died very suddenly went under an operation to get a little lump off her finger. And I've grown to quite an age. I don't know much, but I put two and two together. They said that she had a growth on her kidney. And I found out that it was interfering with her pituitary, the gland of the kidney, not the pituitary gland, but some of you nurses, I'll have to get that word from you, but it is the adrenaline gland. That's the one I wanted. And that reacted or overactivated that gland, and her temperature went sky high. putting her down. Now, this is what I got out of it. The psalmist says, search my reins and my heart. Now, I always knew that the reins there in Scripture were the kidneys. I never thought of them being connected with an adrenaline gland. And I got this little thought out of it. What is it makes your adrenaline rise? Gives you that little punch. Is it when the potatoes go up? Is it when the fish go up and you get a big catch? Is it when you get the new car? When you move into the new house? What is it that gives you that shot of adrenaline? That gives you the push? Or is it when you hear about some soul getting saved? When you get into the presence of the Lord and you get a little word from Him? Or at a worship meeting and your soul just wells up? That's what I mean. It's the thought of, where are your affections? What is it that gives you that little push of adrenaline? Is it things of earth? Or is it the things of heaven? That's what it means to be living in the heavens. Now they came there and God says, this is it. I didn't intend you to stay in the wilderness. I want you to go in and possess the land. Now He says, it's all there before you. But He said, in every place where your foot will tread, that's yours. You have to go in. I give it to you. You have to go in and possess it. Now, dear child of God, I want to tell you, someone has read and counted, I never did, but I'll quote what they said, that there's 33,000 promises in the Word of God. You take that for what it's worth, I got it from someone else. And it's all ours. But every promise is a precept in front of it. Don't forget. He says, what's the precept? Well, here's the promise. I will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. Isn't that a lovely promise? Where is the precept? Come ye out from among them, and be ye separate, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. Here's the precept. And whenever you get a promise, you get a precept in front of you. You fulfill the precept, and God will fulfill the promise. Now God says, here's the precept. He says, you go in. You put your foot on the land. It's yours. That's the precept. Now you can take that into your Christian life. Every Christian wants to have the best of the life in their Christian living. Oh, it'd be lovely, you know, just to have peace and rest. Huh. And just to be able to commit everything to the Lord. Everybody like to live with that. But listen what he says. He says, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And then he says, take my yoke upon you and learn of me. For I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. Find the rest? Get the rest? Where's the precept? So, here's the promised land. And dear brethren and sisters, if we could emphasize nothing more tonight, you cannot get God's promises, the good of them, unless you fulfill the precept. And there's thousands of Christians living today, and here's where they are. Now, the reason they're here is because they disobeyed God. God says, go in. The land is before you. Look at that bunch of grapes. Took two men to carry it. My, I'll tell you. And the pomegranates and all? My, you know, they never saw a pomegranate in the wilderness. Or should I say they never saw one in the wilderness? They didn't grow there. You say they never saw them? You know where they saw them? They saw them on the high priest's garment. On the high priest, a bell and a pomegranate, a bell and a pomegranate, a bell and a pomegranate. That was foretaste of the promised land. So they come up here. And they sent out spies. Now, reading it one way, you'd think that God had sent them. But reading it all, you'll find that they desired to go in, and God let them go. To search the land. Why did they need to search the land when God said it was there? Why did they need to search the land and see what kind of people lived there when God told them? And why did they need to go in and see all the nations? Because God told them, He says, I'll drive them out ahead of you. Unbelief will always want to test what God said. To step out on the naked word of God is too much for human nature. And so here they are. And maybe there's a Christian here tonight. You can look back in your Christian experience, or maybe you're starting off, and you come to Kadesh Barnea. God says the land is before you. And God just seems to be pushing you on. Though it's so dark. Lord, I'd like to see more. I'd like to be able to just see what it's going to be like down the road a little ways. Well, God says, this is the way, walk ye in it. And as thou goest step by step, I will open up the way before thee. Lord, I'd really like to do that. I'll let you just think of it. One man said, when I get into shape, I really intend to give to the Lord. You want to give to the Lord. I'm going to do a little gospel work. I want to get out. I'm not going to be bound down. I want to get out when I get a little better situated. Well, I don't want to be too explicit because some of you might recognize him. The dear fella, he never got in better shape. And I did hear not too long ago he was on welfare. I tell you, friend, if you don't honor God, and God brings you to Kadesh Barnea, and God sets a way before you, and he tells you this is the way, walk ye in it. And you say, yes, Lord, I will, but then there's this, there's that. I know. Many's a Christian has turned back, just as Israel is. They said the cities are walled up to heaven, and there's giants there. And we're just like grasshoppers in their sight and in our own sight. How they know what they look like? God says their defense has departed from them. I said, God says, you go in. He said, we can't. We can't go in. There's two men. And if I don't touch this any other night, there was just two out of over 1 million people that put the blood on the door and left Egypt. Only two crossed the Jordan where we're going to be tomorrow night when we get up there. Caleb and Joshua brought back a good report. Now they said, God said, alright. Breach of trust. You wouldn't trust me. And I'll tell you, dear brother or sister, you're a Christian, you won't trust God. God will keep your nose to the grindstone in unbelief. Eking out, what shall we eat and what shall we drink and wherewithal shall we be clothed? I believe there are Christians today that are so bogged down. Just in the wilderness, they're getting nowhere. That's where they're going, see, in the circle. 38 years. Why? Because it was a time in their life when God brought them up to a certain point. And maybe it was a girlfriend. Or maybe it was a boyfriend. And you saw the path that God had before you, but then you'd have to give up Susan. Well, maybe if I got Susan, I'll be able to convert her to my way of thinking. So you got Susan. And as far as God's concerned, you've been snoozing ever since. You got nowhere. No, friend, that's not the way God works. The path of faith is to take God at His word. He says, go in and possess the land. And they said, no, we won't go in. Well, all right, God says, now you're going to spend, for every day you search the land, you're going to spend a year until every carcass of every man and woman who was over 20 years of age, of these who were years of accountability, they shall die in the wilderness. And you said that your boys and girls would die in the wilderness. They're going to go in and they're going to possess the land. And they said, well, we're right here. We're right here. God says we can't go in. We will go in. Isn't that human nature? You wouldn't do what God told them by faith. But there they stand and they said, we will go in. And so God says, don't try it. But they did try it. And the nations come out and they slew a number of them. So then they started here. Now, oh my, what a sad story. It wasn't long until men of renown arose, Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. They said, we overthrow this Moses fella. He doesn't know what he's doing. Men of renown, we read. They said, let us make us a captain and we will go back into Egypt. We'll go back there to where we came out of. How crooked are you, human is it? And they said, listen, all God's people are holy, Moses. You're not the only one. And they even would seem almost as if they built a rival tabernacle. You'd almost gather that from what they were reading. Opposition to God's plain truth. A rival tabernacle, it says, get up from the tabernacle of those men. God and Moses said, listen, he says, if these men die the ordinary death of all men, then he says, God hasn't spoken by me. But he says, if something supernatural happens that never happened before, then they'll know that God has sent me. God says, tell them to get up from the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And the earth opened. And the word says they went down quick into the pit. God judged them right on the spot. And the earth swallowed them up. Now you'd think by reading there that the children went down to it, but they didn't. Because the sons of Korah wrote some. There's some lovely things written for the sons of Korah. And one place you read, but the children didn't die. But there was God's judgment. Now, they say, Moses. They said, Moses, you're not the only one. We're all holy. And God says, I'll prove whom I have called and who's holy. And he says, gather the 12 tribes, man out of every tribe, and let him take a rod. And I'll choose the one that I have chosen to be my priest and who will post unto me. So they brought 12 rods. And they put Aaron's name on the tribe, on Levi's, the tribe of Levi, Aaron's name went on, or the Levi's rather, and then Simeon's whole 12 of them were named. Now he says, you bring those rods in and lay them up before the Lord. And I'll choose my priest. And they laid up those rods. And in the morning, when they come out, one of the rods had budded, bloomed, and blossomed, and brought forth arms in one night. Who was it? Levi. Now who can dispute that Levi, the tribe of Levi, is the rightful leader? Their mouths were closed, and so Levi steps out. Aaron was of the tribe of Levi. Aaron was the high priest. Now, God is going to give him a whole tribe of servants. And he took the whole tribe of Levi and made them priests to function along with Aaron in this tabernacle. And he says, you'll have no inheritance in Israel, only the tenth of all the other tribes. You have the tithes of all these. And he said to Aaron, I'm giving you these as a gift. That's lovely teaching here. Dear brothers and sisters, we have Levitical service, every Christian. And God has given us the Lord Jesus Christ, the servants. And that's what these Levites were. They were servants to Aaron. Aaron was the high priest that went in behind the veil. They were the ones that did the butchering. They were the ones that cleaned up the mess. The mess, yes. You never butcher? You know what it is? The window of a butcher, a slaughterhouse? You think of all the animals that were slaughtered. Somebody had to clean up the mess. And somebody has to do this humble service today. And that's Levitical work. Now, if we follow the tribe of Levi, I can't do it tonight. But you remember Simeon and Levi, God put a curse on them. You remember? When they went in there, when Dinah was defiled, and they took up the sword and they slew those men. I just forget the name now. But the Shechemites, was it? And the family name was at stake. They said, our family is not going to be brought down to the dust. We'll defend the family, Simeon and Levi. Watch this, an instrument of cruelty. And he said of Levi, he says, I'll scatter thee in Israel. Now, when did God change that? When Moses came down here and he saw the golden calf. We didn't touch it last night. We were speaking of the golden calf. Moses said, who is on the Lord's side? Let him come out unto me. The tribe of Levi came out. Now he says, slay every man his brother. That's not easy to do, is it? John that you grew up with. Slay every man his brother. Why? Because God's honor is at stake. And the tribe of Levi stood. Natural ties were forgotten. When natural ties were at stake, Simeon was there. Where's Simeon now? He's not to be seen. And God says, I'll scatter you in Israel, and you'll be the teaching tribe. So God did scatter them in Israel. He scattered them. But he gave them the highest place because they honored God. When they come out with Moses, and they slew every man his brother, because God's things were at stake. And so, there are the Levites. Now, we've got around this, my dear, judging the core days in the barn. Now there's one thing more, Miriam, poor Miriam dies. I wonder what they thought of the funeral. Well, that's a sad time of the funeral. You know, it's lovely to go to a funeral of a Christian. And as you look into the casket, you can't think of one flaw in the time they saved. Oh, there were nothing before God saved them, maybe. But you can't think of a flaw in their life. Why, that's a good testimony. But you know, sometimes you're called to a funeral. And there is a Christian. And you have to have a service. And you just have to, you can't mention them too much. Why? Because of the flaws. If ever Miriam's leprosy ever shone bright, it was the day she died. Everybody remember, she spoke against Moses. Dear child of God, keep your record clean. Because if the Lord doesn't come, you'll have a funeral. Miriam died. Now, what's going to happen to poor Moses? I'm going to finish with this. We might run 2 or 3 minutes over. They come up here to Mount Hor. I know I'm skipping maybe a little. They're journeying now. And the people again, nothing to drink, no water. No water. And they complain again, Moses, it's your fault. You brought us out here. And there's no water. There's no water. I think that is in chapter 20. Let me just look at that. Numbers chapter 20. Verse 1. And came the children of Israel and the whole congregation into the desert of Zin in the first month, and the people abode at Kadesh. And Miriam died there and was buried. And there was no water for the congregation, and they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And the people chose of Moses and spake, saying, would God that we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. And why have ye brought up this congregation of the Lord into this wilderness? We are, and our cattle should die here, there. And wherefore have you made us to come up out of Egypt, to bring us into this evil place? It is no place of seed, or of fig, or of vines, or pomegranates. Neither is there any water to drink. And Moses and Aaron went up from the presence of the assembly unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and they fell upon their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto them. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take the rod, not your rod, but take the rod. That was the rod that budded and was laid up for a testimony. Take the rod, that was the priestly rod. And gather the assembly together, thou and Aaron, thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth its water. And thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock. Verse 9. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord. That's where it was, there in the holy place. as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock and said unto them, now here's a crisis in Moses' life. Oh, brethren and sisters, he's crisis in our lives. Listen, this is a crisis in Moses' life. And I will say it was a place where Moses, if he could have ever got back, listen what he said. He came to that rock and he said, to the congregation, he said, hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch water out of the rock for you out of the rock? And Moses lifted up his hand and with his rod he smote the rock twice. And the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also. Now you can get the rest of the story by reading the rest of the chapter. But this is what I want to notice that thing. When Moses back here smote the rock, here it is. God told Moses to take his rod. That's the rod that he opened the sea with. Smite the rock. And the water came up. Now that is a type of the Lord Jesus smitten on Calvary. Once and only once will he ever be smitten. Over here, it's a different rock, a different word for rock. I understand. This was a low bedrock. This was a high exalted rock. And this was like the priestly rock, as it were, of the Lord in glory. Doesn't have to be smitten. God says, speak to the rock, Moses. Speak to the rock. And Moses took the rod. We have to be careful in our Christian experience of how we behave. Moses remembered he smote the rock there and the water came out. But Moses, this is different. God says, speak to the rock. Moses stood and he called God's people rebels. He says, must we bring water out of this rock for you, rebels? And he smote the rock. And the water gushed out. The water came. But Moses didn't get into the land because he broke the pipe. He disobeyed God. And he forfeited. Moses never get into the Canaan land. Oh, he looked forward to it. But because he spake unadvisedly with his lips, Moses died in Mount Nebo. God showed him the land on the top of Mount Nebo. But he was buried there. And God arranged that Joshua would bring the people in. All because he spoke unadvisedly. Brethren, if there's any lesson we should learn, it's this. Walk softly. Keep in touch with God. Keep your own soul right with God, because you never know the consequences. Moses, God gave him the water, but Moses didn't get into the land. And so you may do something. Here's a lady, she may step out and preach the gospel on the street corner, or she may even stand in the pulpit and preach the gospel, and souls might get saved to her. Will she be rewarded? No! Why? Because God said, let the women be found in the future. That's not her gift. Moses, the rock, gave forth the water. Moses lost her. It's going to be well done now, good and faithful servant. Not successful, thou faithful servant. And so if there's anything we can learn, that God says to teach you what's in your own heart, let us remember, my heart is your heart. We trust ourselves rather than trust God. And circumstances will bring out in our lives. And so God's educating us for us. And we never know when something is going to cross our pathway that eventually will ruin our testimony. Whatever you do, and whatever I do, let us keep short accounts with God, and let us keep our own soul right with God, so that we won't be wandering around. I don't think there's anything worse than a Christian to get out of the mind of God and to spend their whole life going in circles. Nothing for God. Thank God the Lord is coming. And all these things will be right, but God wants us to learn these lessons now while we're passing through this wilderness. And God bless us. Father, we thank you for the Lord Jesus.